Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program. For retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents and seniors, everyone who is looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, SPIRIT continues to be an ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's session deals with a difficult but important topic. We will be discussing the signs and symptoms of substance misuse, current drug trends, understanding your role in supporting family members, the rising occurrence of misuse of pain medications, how you can get help, and other critical issues. It is being presented by Leanne Foreman, Executive Director, and Sharon Darrick, Associate Director of CCSA. Communities Confronting Substance Abuse and Addiction. This organization was founded by Leanne and her husband, Antiel, in 2018. Through their own family struggles, they created CCSA to create greater community awareness and education about substance misuse and addiction in the Jewish community. CCSA is a graduate of the OU's Second Impact Accelerator. Leanne and Sharon's full bios are on the SPIRIT website and in the emails you received about this program. It is my pleasure and honor to turn the SPIRIT Forum over to Leanne Foreman and Sharon Darrick. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. So, as was mentioned, my family went through this ourselves, which is the reason why we founded our organization. Basically, we are the parents of five children. Ilana is the second oldest child of our five. In eighth grade, just before the start of high school, she decided to take her first drink of alcohol. She was nervous about starting high school. She was very anxious about it. She had seen in movies and in TV that people take a drink, they relax. This is how they cope with their stress and their anxiety, and they feel better. She took that drink. She had what she now in retrospect describes as an aha moment, where she did feel more relaxed. She did feel those anxieties slip away. It did do something chemically to her brain that made her feel more confident and less stressed. My husband and I came home from an evening out that summer. We found her drunk. We obviously were highly concerned. We took her to a therapist. What we said to her at the time was, it's very normal to be anxious about high school. This is not a healthy coping mechanism that you're using to cope with that anxiety and that stress. Fast forward, and in high school, she experimented with marijuana, with alcohol periodically, what she considered, you know, normal curiosity, normal teenage behavior. And then after that, what she didn't realize, and now she describes again in retrospect, is that those substances were already hijacking her brain. They were already taking her down a path to a full-blown addiction, which manifested itself in college. She managed to get through 2 years of college. Towards the end of the second year, it was not pretty. She was using harder and harder substances. She was no longer going to classes. We're talking about, you know, straight A student in high school who got into an honors program in college. She was captain of her soccer team. She founded the chess team at her high school. She was literally a poster child and had many, many friends, was socially well-adjusted. So, you know, when we say it can happen to anyone, we ourselves had to reframe what we thought about the disease of addiction. We looked at the word addict and we said, okay, that's some derelict bum under a bridge with a needle hanging out of their arm. It's not some teenage girl from a, you know, Orthodox yeshiva, all girls high school, doing all these wonderful things, accomplishing all these things and functioning and getting into an artist program in college, who then turned around literally 2 years into college and said, Ima Abba, I'm having a problem. I'm struggling. And that was a very shocking moment for us. I know I'm kind of glossing over this very painful and long journey, but that's not really the point of this discussion. I just want to give some context to it. But, you know, we were confronted with a situation we had no clue about, did not understand that addiction was a medical disease, did not understand that it impacts young people, old people, girls, boys, men, women. It does not matter socioeconomic status, your background, your religious beliefs. It is a disease and it can happen to anyone, and it happened to our family. As a result of our own experience, we felt very isolated. We felt very alone. We live in Teaneck, New Jersey. It's not a closed-minded community, but mental health issues generally are stigmatized, and addiction even more so, substance use and addiction even more so. And this was not that long ago. Thank God our daughter is alive and in recovery now for almost 4 years. So we're not talking about decades ago. But I talk often about how, you know, even 10, 20, 30 years ago, people wouldn't say the word cancer. They'd use the word, you know, the C word. And that was a stigmatized thing, and somehow it was someone's fault that they had cancer. And of course, we think that's silly and ridiculous. So my hope is that by talking about this openly and honestly, what happened to us, what happened to our family and other people that we love and we care about in our community, that the C word, the A word, addiction, will go away, and that the stigma will be removed. So how did CCSA start? Like I said, when we were experiencing this, we felt very isolated. We felt very alone. We decided that we were going to tell our story very publicly here in Teaneck. In April 2018, we put together an awareness event. We spoke to all our children, especially Lana. This is her story. It's not our story to tell. And we asked, you know, are you okay with us talking about this? And she said, yes, on one condition: you give my name, you give my number. I want to be there to help other people who are going through this. She actually became a certified peer recovery specialist, and she is in the field. Helping other people. We talked to our younger children, who some of them were entering into the dating stage and dating age, and people talk about shidduchim, and you know, you're not going to get set up if somebody knows you have a mental health issue in your family, and God forbid, you know, you have somebody using drugs, a drug addict in your family, you know, you're never going to find a spouse. And my son, who is happily married and just got married in August, said at the time when he was 20, if somebody doesn't want to marry me because of this, then I don't want them in my family. This is our family. This is our history. My two younger daughters, one who is now at Stern and one who's a senior at the high school my other daughter went to, I said, this is where your sister went to school. Like, these are her teachers. And, you know, are you okay with being, quote unquote, the sister of the addict? And they all said yes. So we held an event in 2018. We held it in a local high school, not the high school my daughters went to, but actually the one my sons went to. And we were expecting 1,500 people to show up. And there was a lot of focus on it at the time in the Jewish Standard and the Jewish Link and the Bergen Record, which are all local newspapers here. Front page, literally, of a lot of these newspapers, you know, Orthodox family breaks the silence. And it was just made into this huge deal. And we're very involved in our community. And both my husband and I are lawyers. Professionally, I'm actually equipped the law to do this full time, but you know, we were just well known. And I think there was sort of a shock factor, you know, if it can happen to the Foremans, it can happen to anyone kind of feeling, which was exactly the message we wanted to give. And 700 people showed up that night to the event. Another 300 people watched us tell our story streaming online. I actually did not talk. My husband did it. He said he couldn't look at me in the front row because I was very emotional. But, you know, we told our story. And at that event, we put out feedback cards and we said, what does this community need? What do we need to see more of in terms of learning about substance use and addiction? And the three things that we got back were a support group for loved ones, which we have. CCSA runs a virtual support group now, which has people from very right-wing communities, left-wing communities, everything in between, non-Orthodox. We have many members in our support group that are there for loved ones who are struggling with substance use and addiction. We were asked to do more awareness events. We do awareness events all the time. We have another one coming up on December 12th. And the third thing is working with schools, working directly with our youth and students and faculty and parents, making them aware of drug trends, the risks of substance use, and addiction. And one of the most rewarding things about this is that my daughter, we have 7 or 8 trained presenters that we utilize in our schools, middle schools and high schools. One of the nicest things is that my daughter is one of our presenters, and she will come in and tell her story. She's very relatable and real, and she can talk directly to the experience because she went through it as a teen. One of the things I want to talk about with this group in particular and just bring up is, and Sharon will get more into this in terms of how to approach somebody you're concerned about and what to do if you are worried about somebody using substances or even if you're worried about yourself. I just wanted to share a story because some of you are grandparents. I'm a grandparent. I have 2 grandchildren and 1 more on the way. But when we went through this, we had to talk to my parents and my husband's parents and tell them not to give my daughter money, that if she contacted them, that even if she gave them, I mean, look, they give their Hanukkah money and birthday money, you know, like it's falling off the trees. So it would be a very easy thing to go to a grandparent and say, can I have some money? Here's why I need it. It's a very painful thing, but for those families, and we have this in our support group, who will not tell anybody else in their family what's going on. They will not tell siblings, aunts, uncles, you know, grandparents, other family members. You're putting your own loved one at risk for that person and unwittingly enabling them to further their drug habit and to further their substance use. And the first thing we did, regardless of stereotypes and stigma, is we did talk to my in-laws and my parents, because we knew that one of the things we had to do was stop enabling Ilana, meet her and on her own terms in terms of her readiness for help. But for ourselves, we had to put boundaries in place. And that was a very important step. I think that's a good segue into Sharon talking about recognizing if someone is struggling. And we do have a presentation to share with you, and we're going to continue to talk about this subject.
Great. Thank you, Leanne. Hi, everyone. Good morning. We're still in morning. I hope you're all doing well. So my name is Sharon Darrick, and I work with CCSA. I'm going to screen share with you our presentation. And just before I get into it, you know, I think, you know, when the Foremans started their organization and when they share the story, it's, you know, they're extremely lucky and blessed that their daughter Ilana survived and is here, part of the family organization as a presenter. But many families do lose a loved one. And that becomes very real and sad. And it's a tragedy when that happens, especially in our Jewish community, that we see adults and children and teens who are all dying or overdosing, not necessarily intentionally, but just this is happening. And it's so important for us to take the time to learn and educate ourselves on what is addiction, what are the signs. So I'm going to kind of take you on a journey this morning and just explain to you over the next 10 minutes. And then I'll get back to Leanne and she'll share it back with me. But we're going to really go through sharing with you like just explanation, basic explanation of addiction, and then we'll do questions at the end. So feel free to post in the chat and we'll answer them later on. So here we go. Okay. So addiction is when a person has the inability to stop consuming a chemical, a drug, an activity, or a substance. Addiction doesn't happen overnight. No one wakes up one day and says, hi, today's the day I'm going to be an addict. Substances change the way the brain works, which happens over time. And as you can see in this diagram, it shows you the way the brain changes and how it leads to addiction. So as you can see, there's an introduction to substances that releases the dopamine and the feel-good effect, the chemical in the brain. Introduction to the substances can be voluntary and consumption of being prescribed something from a doctor. And as you can see, it moves across into tolerance, is established as the brain adapts to substances, and that it increases the consumption, and that either consuming more of the same substances or moving on to additional substances. And then at the end, really, you're seeing the replacement of the dopamine. Eventually, the brain cannot produce dopamine on its own, and it relies on the substances just to fill baseline. This is, in the end, the strategies of the stages of addiction. So let's look at the different types of addictions out there that you might see. we're talking about nicotine, gambling, sex, porn, alcohol, eating disorder, and drugs. And there's even more out there. But right now, what we're seeing is that it could be any one of those someone might be struggling with. And then also we might see co-occurring. So when we talk about co-occurring, you might see drugs with alcohol or alcohol with gambling, nicotine with an eating disorder. So they can cross over many times. It doesn't just have to be just one. So let's look at signs and symptoms of substance use. So here I've put it into four categories that you can see. There's mood and personality, behavior, physical health, hygiene, and appearance. So I think these are really important to be, this could be in a way relevant to, not relevant, but it could be something that anyone could be struggling with. It doesn't just have to be substance use. And these aren't just assigned symptoms. It can be from many other things, but it's something to be aware of and not to ignore. So what's important is to think about, like, if you're seeing someone's mood and personality is changing and they're seeming more withdrawn and depressed or less motivated to do something versus someone who was always much more high energy and wanting to go out and hang out with friends, then to me, that's something that there's something's wrong there, something's not right, or if their physical appearance is changing, their hygiene. So if you're seeing those areas change, then those are concerns. It doesn't mean, oh my gosh, they're in full-blown addiction. It just means something's not right, something's happening, and let's start the discussion. Let's not ignore it and sweep it under the rug. Let's start talking about it. So many times, as we've seen often, there are many contributing factors. Why is this happening? So we're seeing three popular areas that we see happening. We're talking about trauma when a person has experienced a traumatic experience, such as maybe violence or abuse, a car accident, divorce. Those kind of things can lead to someone to self-medicate in that way because they're escaping from those feelings and emotions. Mental health, such as unaddressed mental health issues, such as anxiety, depression, just feeling low self-esteem, loneliness. So those kind of things, again, when someone is not addressing those mental health issues, they're going to want to self-medicate or might turn to other medications or substances to make them feel better or to escape from those feelings and emotions. Prescription medications we see happening all the time. A doctor might be prescribing to you a medication for dental work, surgery, pain, physical pain that we might be in. And sometimes they're not supervised properly or they've given you too many medications nowadays. So what we're seeing is that there's misuse in that. And when you're taking these kind of prescribed medications for certain periods of time, your body naturally becomes dependent on these substances. But let's look at the do's and don'ts of helping someone with addiction. Once you've noticed the signs of addiction, and if your loved one has struggling with alcohol addiction or an opioid addiction, for example, you'll need to know how to talk to them and treat them in a way that is positive and helpful. Do's and don'ts can be really important thing about being compassionate. Addiction is a disease. Normally we wouldn't consider having someone, I guess, not being compassionate to someone who is struggling with like a cancer or diabetes. We would be compassionate over that. And addiction is looked at the same thing as a disease. Expect difficulties and resistance. Someone might not want to be open to having that discussion. So step out of your comfort zone and start to have that discussion. Educate yourself. Learn more about addiction. What does that mean? What is substance use? What is alcohol addiction? What is drug addiction? Seek counseling or therapy. Turn to someone that has more experience in the field. It could be counselor, it could be a therapist. Many treatment centers offer services to be able to make an action plan. And practice self-care, taking care of yourself and what that means when I have a loved one or someone that I care for that is struggling. How do I take also care of myself, not just the person that's struggling? And then also to consider, don't shame or criticize that person. We're not here to embarrass them because they are dependent now on a chemical or a substance. Expect immediate change. That's not always going to happen, so don't expect it. It takes time and it's a progress. You know, that's part of the whole having the discussion, trying to get someone to a point that is wanting to get help or that you want to get help. Enabling your loved one is something that we're so easy to do about how do we feed into the situation versus saying, you know, I love you and today I'm not going to drive because you're always drinking and you're drinking too much versus just saying, okay, I'll drive because I know you're drinking. So again, it's enabling the behavior and not feeding into the manipulation of the situations. And don't give up hope. There's always there's always an opportunity to be able to help someone if they're willing and to find a way, and there's treatment out there. So let's talk about starting the conversation. It's most important when we're thinking about how we're going to talk to someone, how we say it and what we do, and always address the problem and talk to the person when you're talking with them. Give them the opportunity to ask you questions. Keep in mind and be aware the person may be hiding their true feelings due to fear of embarrassment, as they might be struggling socially at home, having family pressures, work-life issues, or mental health issues. So always pick a good time to talk. Not before guests are coming over or you're about to go out to a family event or party. A good time would be in the car when you're driving with someone, before bedtime, or while you're out for dinner together on your own or at home having dinner, or while you're hanging out. Keep an open mind when you're talking to someone and make sure it's not about you. It's about the person and what they're struggling with. Ask open-ended questions such as, what did you do? What were you hanging out with? What movie did you watch last night? Anything that allows the conversation to roll and to keep talking. How is your workload? So understand active listening. Put your phone down and look directly at the person you're talking with, nodding your head, trying to use positive and caring face expressions. Use I statements. I wanted to ask you. I was thinking. I am concerned. I am worried. Don't use I heard from your cousin, I heard from the neighbor, your friend told me. Those kind of statements make it more threatening. So offer empathy, support, help, and guidance. You are there for that person, and it is not your job to save or fix the situation. You are there to be sympathetic and guide them through their challenging situations. Be someone they can chat things through with. Stay calm and patient. This can be really hard. Can be very hard and easier said than done. And don't panic and let the anger and the frustration rise and take over you. By staying calm, it always allows the person the opportunity to feel comfortable talking things through with you. So, and these are just one of my favorite acronyms, which is CALM, control your thoughts and actions. A, assess and decide if you're upset, too upset to continue. And if you are, then just leave the situation. If you're feeling too angry or upset, and then maybe come back and make a plan to deal with the situation. And when we say make a plan, we're talking about really about make the plan like today, later on, or tomorrow. Making a plan like next week, next month, it's too late. Sometimes we're missing the opportunity when someone needs help, but they kind of need it now, and we need to address those situations, not ignore them. So I'm going to hand it to Leanne to take on the second part.
Okay. You can push it forward. Thank you. So just to reiterate something Sharon said and something that we experienced in our own lives, it is really hard to make that assessment. Am I enabling or am I supporting? Am I helping the person or am I hurting them somehow? We had to make a very difficult choice when Ilana was living on college. She had an apartment. And when we realized she wasn't going to classes, our money was not going towards tuition, it was going towards drugs, and it wasn't going towards rent, we did tell her that we could no longer give her funding. And we didn't do it right away, but we said, when your lease runs out, which was another month, you know, we need a plan, you need to do something. And we were forcing her into a corner, and we knew we were forcing her into a corner. We also had to decide, are we able to let her come back into our house? She has three younger siblings who are living at home. We didn't want this in our home. You know, we were envisioning having to change the locks or living on the streets. I mean, there's nothing easy about this. There were no easy decisions that were made. Thank God we didn't come to that point. She did seek help at that point. She went to treatment in Florida. She went to rehab. It was not an easy journey. But as I mentioned, she's, 4 years into recovery now. The reason why I'm mentioning this is one of the things Ilana says was really instrumental in her recovery was that we stood by her no matter what. We just kept on telling her, we love you. We're here for you. We're here to support your healthy choices. We're here to help you when you're ready to get help. There was a lot of resistance. There was a lot of denial. Even though she came to us and told us she had a problem, it wasn't like she immediately jumped on a plane and went to rehab. It took time to really elicit that outcome. So if you do have a loved one who's struggling, and again, there are no easy answers here. And of course, you know, in 45 minutes, we're not going to, you know, give you a playbook, but standing by them and helping them with their healthy choices and supporting them is something that is very powerful, even if they're resistant, even if they're in denial, even if they say they don't need help or they don't have a problem. So the CDC just released some very, very scary statistics last week. We have hit a record high, and it's in no small part due to COVID-19, of overdose deaths, over 100,000 deaths. And that was measured from a period of April 2020 to 2021. There is a lot of discussion about fentanyl, which is a synthetic opioid. It's something that is on the streets that is laced into synthetic drugs. Like if you go to buy street form of OxyContin or street form of Adderall or even marijuana, oftentimes it's laced with fentanyl. People who die of overdoses, when they do autopsies, they find traces of fentanyl and sometimes don't even find the substance that the person thought they were buying. So it's something to be aware of. It's something to understand that this is a drug trend that's out there. Sharon, you can move it to the next one. Okay, thank you. So let's talk a minute about older adults and substance use, because, you know, my daughter was a teenager when she started her substance use. Many times people who are in addiction started their use young, scarily young, sometimes, you know, as early as 10, 11 years old. But there is an ignored population out there of, you know, 60 or 65 and over, where substance use disorders or SUDs are on the rise. And there are many reasons why this happens. Aging leads to social and physical changes that increase vulnerability to substance misuse. Sometimes, you know, there are some studies out there that talk about how aging brains may be more impacted and sensitive to drugs. Older adults are more likely to experience mood disorders, health problems, or memory issues. These can be worsened by drug use. And it can also exacerbate the negative health consequences of using substances. Then you have the normal things like impaired judgment, coordination, and reaction time, which can result in falls or car accidents. These injuries pose a greater health risk for our older population. Chronic health conditions tend to develop as part of aging. Older adults are often prescribed more medications, and there's a higher rate of exposure to potentially addictive substances because of that. And the other risks include accidental mixing or misuse of medications, where somebody has many prescriptions and you know, maybe they have memory issues, or they just have a lot of substances, or they think they can mix, you know, let's say a prescription medication and alcohol. And the use of prescription medication or substances in general, there are many triggers. I'll get into that in a second. But just thinking about the changes in your body, mentally and physically, thinking about, you know, overall change in perhaps retirement, health changes, loss of a spouse, loss of another loved one, relocation, maybe somebody is moving into assisted living. These are all things that can really contribute to, you know, kind of an overlooked population of substance users. You can switch to the next one, Sharon. So oftentimes healthcare providers miss substance use amongst our older adults because they can confuse the symptoms of substance use with other medical and behavioral issues. There are some things to look out for: memory issues, changes in sleeping habits, unexplained chronic pain, changes in eating habits, wanting to be alone often, lack of socialization, neglecting their personal hygiene, you know, failing to bathe, failing to take care of themselves properly, losing touch with loved ones, not wanting to be involved in family gatherings or other, you know, relationships they normally enjoyed, lack of interest in usual activities. And, you know, again, it's easy to confuse other normal aging issues with substance use or substance misuse. So these are just some of the things to look out for. And you know, like Sharon said before, detecting signs and symptoms of struggle in any population, whether it's teens, you know, young adults, older adults, it is just a matter of using your instinct. If something seems off, it feels off, it doesn't feel right, then chances are your instincts are telling you something is going on. It doesn't necessarily have to be substance use. It could be some other mental health issue, but just kind of keeping tabs and having the ability to be open to asking that person, is everything okay? I'm worried about you. Next one, Sharon. Okay. Understanding what's out there is really part of not just fentanyl and not just overdose deaths, but understanding generally speaking what current drug trends look like is important. First of all, marijuana can sometimes be recommended by doctors. Medical marijuana can sometimes be recommended by doctors for certain symptoms. It is not an FDA-approved medication, but it is used for certain limited conditions. However, because it's of its legalization and more common use, it is being prescribed more and more often. But there are risks to it. There are risks, respiratory conditions, depression, impaired memory, impaired judgment, cardiovascular functioning, altered motor skills. All those things are things that can be impacted by marijuana use. It can also interact with other medications. It can complicate existing health issues and physiological changes that are common amongst older adults. These are two examples of what is commonly used right now, in terms of marijuana recreationally. So one is called dabbing. It's a solid form. It's almost like what crack is to cocaine. It's a solid form of marijuana, and it contains extraordinarily high levels of THC. THC is the compound in marijuana that is the hallucinogenic. It's the mind-altering chemical. So if people smoked marijuana, back in the 60s, maybe it was, 20% THC content, whatever it was, it's now up to 80%. Levels are up to 80% THC content, just much more potent, much stronger, and the effects are more powerful. Edibles are very common. Basically, you take the oils from the THC oils from the cannabis plant, you extract it, you bake it into goods, or you put it into candies. Scarily, there's a lot of packaging out there now that looks like real things like Skittles and gummy bears and regular brownies and regular cookies. And there was an incident recently in Flatbush, I think it was, where there was a Shabbos gathering and, stuff was put out on the table that looked like normal snacks and candy for kids. And it actually ended up having marijuana in it, THC in it. Edibles are also very tricky because it takes a lot longer to feel the effects of it. So somebody might have, one gummy bear, let's say, and say, oh, I don't feel high, I don't feel anything, and then eat a whole package of them. So there is a risk of overuse and overconsumption, besides the fact of, confusing it with regular products when you don't think you're even eating something or ingesting something that has THC in it. Okay, Sharon. So one of the things that's most common amongst older adults is actually alcohol. A lot of substance use treatment centers report age 60 or age 65 and over treating older adults. Research shows that many adults binge drink. We think of binge drinking as a teenage activity, but binge drinking basically means consuming 4 or more drinks for a woman or 5 or more drinks for a man on any one occasion. So in a period of time, if you're sitting and having 5 drinks or 4 drinks, that is what's considered binge drinking. And it is a very common thing. AUDs, alcohol use disorders, can really put older adults at risk for other things as well. Diabetes, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, liver and bone problems, memory issues, and mood disorders. And one of the things that we talk about a lot in our school presentations and to our parents is how we model our alcohol use. Because of our cultural celebrations and rituals, we really have a lot of alcohol in Jewish culture. It's, Friday night Kiddush, it's the 4 cups of wine on Passover, Purim, Simchas Torah, a bris. These are all things that utilize alcohol. There are Kiddush clubs. In fact, some of the Kiddush clubs are now becoming edible marijuana clubs instead of scotch clubs. But we really have to just be careful about how we model our drinking. It doesn't mean that as adults, we can't have healthy relationship with alcohol. And we'll talk about self-assessment tools and if our relationship really is healthy later on. But when you're looking at how you behave around alcohol, we talk to parents about, you know, do you leave the bottle of wine on the table Friday night and finish the whole thing? Or do you pour yourself a glass and put it away? Do you bring out the $200 bottle of scotch aged 18 years, you know, in oak barrels and say, and then your kids around you look at it and go, wow, that's something to be coveted. How are we glorifying alcohol? How are we modeling our behaviors around it? You know, we struggle with this in our own family because we do have somebody who struggled, you know, who suffered with addiction and is in recovery. And I enjoy a glass of wine Friday night, not every Friday night, but sometimes I want to open up a nice bottle of wine and have a glass of wine. And I have sensitivity to our daughter. We don't do that around her. If she is with us, we just don't drink. It's something that we personally don't feel comfortable doing in front of her, but it's something that I know with my other kids, and again, they're all, you know, evolving into adults or are adults with their own families at this point. We just have to be careful about the messaging that is sent. You know, especially if your grandchildren or children or siblings, whoever is on this meeting, are going off to Israel and they're suddenly legal at the age of 18, that's another consideration that we always talk about in our student programming, is, you know, talking about the dangers of alcohol consumption and you know, even though you're legal in certain countries, doesn't mean it's always safe. You can go ahead.
Great, thank you. Okay, so how much is too much? So here I think this is like an image I want you to think about when we think about how much are we consuming, what are we putting in our bodies. This is about alcohol, it could be about substances too and medications that we're taking. But this is more like a teaser to think about where am I at and what am I doing, and to look at the different images, because the alcohol levels are very different. So you might have a small, you know, a cup of whiskey here and you see alcohol levels is at 40% versus a can of beer, which is only 5% alcohol. So sometimes we don't think about it and think it's all right. So it's just to keep in mind our perceptions on this. And, you know, and when we talk about what is heavy drinking here in the US and what does it look like for men consuming more than 4 drinks on any day or more than 14 drinks per week is looked as heavy drinking. And for women consuming more than 3 drinks on any day or more than 7 drinks per week is also heavy drinking. So let's talk about how do I know if I have a problem? And we've been touching, there's a general theme you see about that we keep been putting this throughout our slides, is it really to start thinking about where am I at and what's going on for either myself or my loved ones. So this is really more focused on yourself, about what are the general signs of addiction when my life has become out of control, unmanageable, I'm just not functioning anymore. Or I could be a really functioning alcoholic or someone who's using other substances, I'm functioning and but I'm still totally dependent on it. The inability to stay away from substances or behaviors despite negative consequences. So again, all I'm doing is or thinking about is that when am I getting next drink? When am I using? Is it going to be, or is it that I'm something just doing every evening? And this is now the new behaviors that I've gotten into. So decreased socialization, lack of abandoning commitments or ignoring relationships. So again, once I was committed to my synagogue and being part of the community and I was volunteering in the sisterhood or with davening or doing certain things, and now I'm just not interested in it. And I'm, you know, and again, I'm just not socially there. I don't want to be part of these groups anymore. And most importantly here is ignoring risk factors. So knowing that we are drinking alcohol when we take, or if we're let's put it this way, if we're taking a prescribed medication and we're drinking alcohol, and again, those can be dangerous, mixing those two substances together or getting in the car and driving afterwards. So we have to think about what are the risky factors am I taking, and where am I at with that? Have I gone too far? And how far is too far? So just to think about these thoughts, these questions. So is it time to think about making a change? And I think it's like, when you think about it, it's about wanting to do it. It's not about just, sometimes we need to and we have to because we're in that situation and we're past it, but it's also about thinking about it, and it depends where we're at. So the decision to change and stop misusing substances is really up to you. There are many mixed feelings about this, and it's normal, and it can be scary. And most importantly, which many times it happens, but we don't have to wait to hit bottom, as making a change sooner rather than later is always much, much better. Once you're ready to decrease use or stop altogether, think about the following things. And thinking about weighing the pros and cons. So pros and cons, you know, why do I want to stop? What does it benefit me versus what is it not benefiting me if I continue to do this? So weighing that out, are you ready to or not? Most importantly, if you're not ready to do it, it's the success in this journey becomes very hard. So someone has to really want to do this. And then the decision of decreasing or stop usage, I put both down because decrease or stop shows that there's also a harm reduction model. And that doesn't, just because someone is drinking a lot does not mean they're in addiction, in that addiction phase of it. It just means that maybe they're drinking a little bit too much and they have to consider, should I be decreasing what I'm drinking, or how much substances am I putting in my body? Am I misusing my prescription medications? So again, it's about coming back and saying, okay, what's going on and where am I at with that? And that's where it comes into effect of, do I need to make a plan, and how do I make that plan, and how to change in that process? What are my next steps? So we're looking at the pros and cons of substance use, and I thought it would be really important to share what that looks like when we think about what that is. So the pros of, you know, if I make the decision to stop or really cut down, it could be to improve, it will be improving my health, right? All my health that is a healthier lifestyle, to improve my relationships, my friendships, to avoid hangovers when you wake up and you're feeling just like it's just a struggle to get up and not feeling good, to do better at work if you're still working, to save money. It's amazing if you ever did the calculation of how much you spend on alcohol or on medications, that you could save a lot of money. And then to lose weight and get fit and healthier and exercising in our body, to avoid more serious problems. As we know, if you continue to use and misuse alcohol or other substances, your body does deteriorate. And then to meet my own personal standard, what are my standards at? Where am I at? And then the cons, which is the hardest thing, which is why we know so many people really do struggle when it comes to stopping, is, you know, I need another way to unwind. You know, I like my glass of wine, or my three glasses of wine, or four glasses of wine every night to unwind and to relax. It helps me feel more at ease socially and in my social circle. Some of us might be in social circles when we're going out for dinner with our friends, that, you know, there's wine out and there's other things there. And so socially, that might be a hard thing to stop, and those behaviors around it. And then it helps me cope with my stress again. So it's again about unwinding and my stress levels. And most importantly, like most biggest reason, it's just hard. And at a certain point, we are dependent, we're physically dependent on these substances. So it's very hard to, when you make the decision to stop, how am I going to do that? How's that going to make me feel? So types of treatment out there. So we've talked about this whole journey. And I think most importantly in this journey, it's about having the conversation, understanding a basic understanding about what addiction is, and really about understanding that we're in a society where, and we're in a stage where, you know, you're not alone anymore. And there's no such thing as, I can't get help, I can't go to treatment, I'm Jewish, so I can't get counseling, or I can't go to rehab. That's not the case anymore. And there are so many opportunities out there to get help, whether it be therapy. Therapy can be one-on-one. You just go weekly or twice a week to see a therapist and talk about what your challenges are and your struggles. And really be honest about that if you're having an addiction issue, or if you're feeling that you're misusing or drinking a little bit too much. And then there's group therapy where people come together and they have group therapy or peer support, which could be a 12-step program like AA, or an Alcoholics Anonymous support group, or a Narcotics Anonymous support group, or a SMART group. Those kind of groups are 12-step based, or like a 12-step based group, and can be very helpful. And then detox. You should never try and detox on your own. It can be very hard and painful and dangerous. So there's many places now where you can go detox and help you through that, that has a good medical team to support you through it. And then outpatient is when you go 2-3 times a week, maybe 4 times a week, where you have, which can be there in an outpatient treatment program, can last for a few months depending on what the plan is, and it we have group therapy and one-on-one therapy, and then we have inpatient treatment, which can be anything from depending from 14 days to a year, maybe even longer of treatment depending what you choose to do and the efforts that we make to do this. So most importantly, many times people say I can't afford it, and it's not about money anymore. There are treatment centers that take insurance, and there are places, certain organizations might even give you some financial aid towards it. So it's just a matter of figuring out, do I want to do this? And also my loved one, it's not just about me, but also the loved one. And it's a whole process, doing it together, hand in hand. So with that, I'm going to stop screen sharing, and we'll have an opportunity right on 15 minutes, right, to be able to ask any questions that you might have for us. If you want to put it in the chat group, please do.
And just to give you a brief update, and close out this program with a message of hope. So Ilana, like I said before, is 4 years in recovery. She finally finished college. It took her 8 years to get her degree. As she said, it was the best 8 years of her life. That's what she likes to joke around and say. But she's actually in a master's program now at University of Pennsylvania, getting a degree in liberal studies and hoping to work in public health and policy and use her own experience in addiction and recovery to improve our world.
Thank you both so much. This was just so important for everyone to hear. Of course, as we all know, we're going into a holiday season of Thanksgiving and then Hanukkah and just all sorts of things happening. So this is a time for us to watch what's going on in our families and to hopefully we won't need this information, but in case we do, it's there and it's something for everyone to think about. I want to thank you both. I don't have anything in the chat to me. Do you, did anyone chat you with any questions or comments? I think people are just kind of just thinking, and we're going to send the information from the contact information along with our recording today. So if anybody wants to reach out privately, that's something they can do. Leanne, Sharon, is anything there for you?
I do not have anything. If you want, we do have a slide with our contact information. If you want me to throw that up there.
Okay. Well, we'll also send it out later. So, you know,
okay.
So, you know, so I'm going to ask you guys to send it to me, you know, how we want to reach you, and we'll also put the website in so that everybody has that information. Sure. And of course, beyond anybody using it, having the need personally, this is information that you can share with others in whatever settings, over Shabbos tables, with your shuls. This is life-saving. And this is something that we all have to, you know, take responsibility for. So I think everybody, it doesn't look like there's any comments.
I have someone that posted something to me, and I'm going to ask this person to just, you know, please email us at the end. Judy will send out our emails to continue contacting. But someone asked, I'm going to be very general about, what happens if someone's already started the process or considering to get help and treatment? And what do we do? So I think, you know, when you're in it already and a person has admitted that they, you know, they have a problem and they're trying it. And it sounds like, you know, but you made suggestions, they tried it with a therapist or a psychologist, and then now that, you know, and then that it worked, it didn't work, whatever the process is. I think, you know, most importantly when it comes to someone, a friend or a loved one that's struggling, is to, one, which we said, don't give up and don't keep trying to make suggestions. Just be non-threatening, be kind, be sensitive to what they're going through, because it's a very hard thing to give up what you love, right? I always see, like, many times I've throughout the years seen people come back to me for help. They just love their booze, right? I say it in that way, they love their alcohol. They just struggle. They try and get clean. They get sober. And really to continue on making suggestions. Do you want to go to treatment? Do you want to continue seeing the therapist? What happened with the person I suggested? Or, you know, why didn't you try calling them again? So it's, again, being, you know, those questions of being supportive and, again, not feeding into it, but also saying, just carry on trying to reach out and get help. Don't give up. It's okay. Just to continue. Don't give up on trying to see a therapist or try to go to treatment, just to continue making those suggestions and not give up.
I just had one very quick question that I can answer, was what the CCSA stands for. The acronym is Communities Confronting Substance Use and Addiction. So, and then we got another compliment and appreciation for the program. So that's what I have here. Okay. So I want to thank Sharon.
I have one more question. Oh, sorry.
No problem.
If
no
kids
problem.
Have tried marijuana, what is the chance they'll continue to get addicted? So, first of all, I want to talk about the whole, which Leanne had brought out about the fentanyl crisis is happening in this country. Marijuana is not necessarily when you're buying it, if it's not coming to you by a prescription from a doctor and you're not getting it from a dispensary, but if you're getting it from a dealer, more than likely what we're seeing is that it's laced with other substances. And usually that substance right now is fentanyl, which is what's creating the overdose that's happening with people dying of this overdose. So again, to keep in mind that even if you try it once, it doesn't mean you're necessarily getting addicted to it straight away. It's more like what else is in it. And that's the part where it can become fatal, that you know, when you saw the picture before on the slide, that the penny with a little bit of white sprinkle there, that's a part where it can be so lethal and so dangerous. So, and that's what's causing these overdoses. So it's not about, like, again, if I smoke a bit of marijuana, it's more like what's in it and how frequently you're doing it. And those substances are making you become more addictive. So one time use, no, you're not becoming addictive, but it's the progression of that and the dangers of what is coming in the joint. If they're smoking in a joint or if they're vaping it, it depends also how they're doing it. So I hope that answers that question.
Okay. Anything else anybody has? I don't see anything either. So I want to thank you both so much for this important work that you're doing. The OU is certainly proud to have you as graduates of the OU's Impact Accelerator, which I've had the pleasure of doing a little bit of work on applications. So I know that there a new group is now being formed. So we want to thank you so much. I just want to announce to everybody that next week it's Hanukkah, and Spirit's going to take a little break. We'll be back in 2 weeks from now, and you'll be getting emails telling you about that program. So just watch your emails. What else? So December 7th will be our next program. At this time of the year, when everybody's getting many tzedakah inquiries, I would just want to have you make sure that you consider the Spirit Initiative among the tzedakah that you're giving. The OU has spent a lot of time on this program, and we just would appreciate your help. So you get there's a donate button on all the emails that you receive. So we appreciate if you could respond through the donate button or through checks that are very important that they say Spirit Initiative on it. So I want to thank everybody, wish you all a good week, a good Shabbos, happy Thanksgiving, and Freilich and Hanukkah. Be safe, be happy, and look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.